So the next part is network evolution. Networks sort of go through various stages, again, in keeping with the life cycle or ecocycle of birthing or forming, growing, maturing, and then some kind of death or transformation, as the case may be. So the first stage is formation, and the important thing is to confirm, as many of you are doing or have done, the need for the network. And maybe even more importantly, the readiness for the network. And that comes from your vision, as we just heard about. And if you have that in place and you're ready, the rest actually will follow quite nicely. But context is important. Again, it's very unique to your community. Timing is important. Is this right for you at this time? And resource availability. And not just human and fiscal, but do you have the technological resources, the IT resources in some cases, and maybe more importantly, the time. And I know some of these timelines are very tight, but time is a non-renewable resource, so consider that carefully as well, given the tight timelines that have been often imposed on you. The design has a lot to do with your scope, values, and norms, as we've just heard about. Is there a network orchestrator, someone who can start to create these relationships and early on begin to get the right players to the table that are aligning with your vision, and spend time with them to understand the network way, not the hierarchical way, not the political way, not the bureaucratic way, but the nebulosity of the network way. That's not something that everyone understands. And again, there is a lot of literature that can help support what that means in practical terms. So if we can sort of get that off to the right foot, the rest can follow quite nicely. But it really does start with having a vision that everyone understands. Then the network can grow. It can start to demonstrate its value. Trust becomes demonstrated as people begin to work together more frequently and address issues together. Power, if it arises, can be addressed more directly because of the trust. In some cases, you might want to use positive deviance, which is an interesting term. And that's sort of that magic ingredient that's deviant from normal behavior, but is very positive in certain contexts. And it's hard to put your finger on that sometimes, but sometimes the most effective way to grow and develop, and I think the earlier example was not linking to four-year cycles, but having a longer-term presence. Experimenting with funding models is another thing. You don't have to stay with the status quo. Experiment with other ones. Using developmental evaluation earlier than you might think, and start to document successes and failures, and not be afraid to sort of face that reality that things might not be going as planned, and then what can you do about that? And deviating in terms of not just having the usual cast of players in the network from the usual organizations, but do you have really the right organizations there, and all of them, and the right people, not just who you think ought to be there because of their position in that organization. So if those are in place, things can grow quite nicely and become more mature. And where evaluation is early, it's certainly important to do it again to see how things are going, especially how the relationships are being developed, or in some cases not being developed, and developmental sort of delays, if you will. And then what do you do about that? Evaluation is important formatively, and certainly important not to do it just once, but to do it again and again to see and measure progress or regress in some cases, but importantly, what to do about it. In terms of as networks mature, they need to be legitimate. Do the network partners feel that it's credible, or is it credible to them? And that's important earlier. What's important later is, are the funders and other people that you're working with and for and being funded by, do they see you as credible? And again, evaluation can help you do that. When this can happen, network learning can happen, when trust is being built over time, but not until then. And once these things are in place, resilience can be achieved. And that's mean being resilient to shocks and things like in the economy and the funding and leadership change and the politics. All things can shock your network. So if it's mature and robust with enduring relationships, you can withstand those kind of unforeseen shocks, be they political or otherwise. And then there's the period of death and transformation. You don't want to die. You probably more want to transform. And we don't have enough experience in the network research, and certainly not in your environment, to know where and when and if this should happen. But there is questions about, should you actually plan for demise of organizations rather than just think they will be there forever? And I think most organizations that are created are under the impression that they're there forever. But it's worth thinking about, once the job is done, whatever that is it worth planning, the sunset of the organization or a network, as the case may be? And in some cases, it is premature. Like in the case of Alberta, they were killed prematurely simply because the politics of the day said, we don't need you anymore. So the question is, do we design or do we allow that to happen? So that's the end of that particular part, and I'd like to, now David Butcher from Rural Remote to maybe bring this to life from a practice perspective. David?
Great, thank you very much. So representing rural and remote, and we're a little bit of an odd duck within the division's world in that we don't represent a single community. And our journey over the last 7 years has kind of been illustrated by the points of growth, maturation, and I hope not death, but definitely transformation. When we started 7 years ago, we were a loose amalgamation of four community-based chapters, and we've gone through exponential growth over the last 7 years, so we now have 12 community-based chapters spread across the province and one non-geographic chapter encompassing physicians who do locums, who are in small communities not big enough to be freestanding chapters. And we network with and collaborate with five different health authorities. So, and each of those chapters has its own way of doing work. It has its own set of networks and relationships at the local level. And so over the last 7 years, we started with a board. I mean, I'm going to touch on some of the governance issues here as well. We started with a board that was a representative from each of the chapters, which was great in terms of building connections between those leaders, but not very effective as a way of trying to create a governance for an organization. So we have in timing with the changes to the Societies Act, but as a matter of necessity anyway, redesigned our board, much as David has talked about, to bring in some external expertise, people with different professional backgrounds, different perspectives, but all with a deep rooting in rural communities and rural health settings. Currently, we're going through the process of trying to support network development within our own organization. We have groups of communities that are within the same health authorities. We have four communities chapters within the Vancouver Island Health Authority catchment area. We have community chapters in Interior, in Northern. And each of those not only has its set of networks and relationships within its catchment area and with the people that they work with on a daily basis, but we're trying to organizationally build supports for networking between communities in the same region so we can more effectively build relationships and networks with our health authority partners. We're doing that by trying to build, we started out very much with a form, which was under the original governing documents for divisions, you have to have a collaborative services committee with your health authority. So we started out with trying to build single collaborative services committees with the health authorities. That didn't work for any one of a number of reasons, but primarily because there was no one table with the health authority at which each of those chapters could realize their relationships and effective networks at the local level. So we're now trying to enhance that local collaboration and build structural supports for our organization that support the local networking, the local relationships, while at the same time building a common way of doing business. And so enhancing the networks with between our communities. So in essence, we are a network of networks. Our form looks very, very different 7 years in than it did when we were initially founded. And I don't think any of us that were there when we first set out our strategic goals and our strategy plan would recognize what we're where we are now. But the journey we're on very much reflects that evolution, and hopefully our form now will reflect the functions that are necessary. The challenge that has been for us with the current government network initiative, the primary care networks, is that it started with a form, and the expressions of interest tried to shoehorn people into a form that we didn't recognize in our rural communities. And so we had two of our chapters that were very far along the line of developing expressions of interest, and at the end of the day we had to say, we're not ready to embrace that particular networking opportunity because the form of it does not reflect the function of what goes on in our communities. And so we're now back at the drawing board looking at it and saying, how do we get engaged collectively with that next iteration of primary care networks, building on the on our evolutionary journey and building networks internally?
Thanks, David. That's an excellent example of the evolution of networks. And as you point out, the growth even to the concept of the network of networks, which is another level of sophistication. So thank you for that.